I'm Josh. Welcome back. This is Surrender Birdies, episode 12. Joined again by Mr. Josh Hafkin. Been a minute. How you been?
Dude, it's great, man. It's been a while since we kicked this thing off a year or two ago, the old Surrender Birdies. So nice to be back.
Yeah, man. One of the things, well, we have a bunch of stuff to talk about, but wanted to have you back on because you've been busy and want to talk about a couple of the projects that you've really been working on that I thought, you know, listeners here would get a kick out of hearing what you've been doing. And the timing of it, you've been writing a book that's coming out in a few days, right?
Yeah, man. The 15th, it seems to be between your magazine, my book, it's the season of content. So it's cool to,
trying to keep print alive.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's something very tangible. As I set out to kind of like do this, it was not to write a book. I just kind of started working on writing. But then as it evolved, what I really wanted to do was like, just like you have in behind you and I have behind me, I wanted something tangible that I could, you know, put on the shelf or hand to my son one day and say, like, this is something that I wrote and I wanted you to know what I was thinking and feeling. And it just feels tangible. So, you know, in the same way that the magazine, I think, is people want that stuff. People want to hold something in their hands and flip through something. And, you know, I remember getting Sports Illustrated, first Sports Illustrated for kids when I was younger, and then, you know, original Sports Illustrated. And it was best part of my month flipping through that. And I would, you know, go through every article. So I love the idea that, you know, you're keeping it alive. And I'm very excited about this book coming out in a couple of days.
So what is the book? Tell the listeners, what is the concept of the book? What is it? Give us the rundown. Yeah. Give us the elevator pitch.
So very briefly, I went on a golf road trip to Nova Scotia last summer. And then over the course of a little bit, I started writing about it, writing about the experience, the golf. And then through that process, my dog kind of started to talk and converse with me. And it kind of evolved from this, you know, very straightforward, I'm writing about a trip, to a more novelized travelogue. And you know, there's a little blurb before you start it that says, every part of this story is 100% true, except for the parts that aren't. And I think that that's a really good way of setting things up.
I love it. So your dog started talking to you halfway through the trip. This was a golf trip to Nova Scotia, right? Give us more. Like,
Yeah. So, you know, I did this trip and it was amazing. Well, one, Nova Scotia is so cool. And Nova Scotia in the summer, if you're a golfer, it's absolutely fantastic. The weather is incredible. You know, 65 to 75, beautiful sunny days. Like it's magical up there in the summer in August, September. So I was up there. I brought my dog, and really the goal was to learn how to play golf with my dog. Like, I brought my dog on these rounds. I played 8 rounds at 7 different courses, and some were dog friendly, a couple were not. And it was really just navigating the road trip, the dog, and golf, and trying to balance all of those different things. And really what I learned was that a road trip and a golf trip are almost diametrically opposite. Like, you are sitting, rushing places. I was sleeping in my car some nights. Like, I was doing things, you know, eating on the road. I was rushing, you know, to tee times. And so it really taught me that you need to schedule a road trip differently to also play good golf. You need to be able to get there early. You need to be able to set up and warm up. I have my dog with me. Can I bring her? If I can't bring her, can I make sure she's set up in a comfortable place so I can go play for 2 to 4 hours? Like, all of those logistics, I kind of was working out on the fly. And this book is kind of like some of those learnings, like lessons for golfing with your dog, lessons for golf and road trips, you know, the different things that I kind of learned and saw along the way, and kind of the stories that would come to my mind as I would pass through small towns and just learn about this really cool country. I mean, Canada is so close to me. Halifax was an Eskimo town. Like, who lives in Halifax? But then you get up there in the summer and it's this incredible, vibrant city with art, music, culture, 500,000 people. And, you know, I was just blown away again and again by the country, the golf, and the learning experience.
Love it. Sounds great. It sounds fantastic. You sent me the first chapter when you were first kind of getting going, and I thought it was really well done. So I'm excited to read the rest. And I know a little bit about your trip just from you telling me, but I think, it's interesting. Golfing, two things. One, golfing solo kind of has a certain connotation, or that, I don't know about connotation, but a lot of people kind of don't like to do it. A lot of people do. But a lot of yep. people kind of, what's the point kind of thing of golfing by yourself? I'm not one of those people. I loved golf by myself. And then golfing with a dog is another one. There's that yep. that has some strong opinions of golf. There are intense dog lovers out there that thinks there should be more dogs on golf courses. There's probably intense dog lovers that thinks golf courses are no place for dogs. Obviously, it depends on the course and club and policies and all sort of thing. But I think it'd be, I'm excited to read it. And it seems like it's going to be a valuable piece for folks that, have dogs, or have a sense of adventure and kind of want to combine both golf with that. Any inspirations? I mean, you write, we'll talk about the website you launched here in a bit that talks yeah. about some Anthony Bourdain vibes, but, Tom Coyne obviously is kind of the travel golf writer of our time, having written so many travels around Ireland, Scotland, and US. Yeah.
Driving the green.
Sure. What kind of inspired all this?
Well, so I was between jobs. So the original trip was I was between jobs. I'm about to have a baby boy in October. And so I was just, when you have those opportunities, it's rare. So to be able to take, 10 days and do something, and like you said, do something by yourself was pretty unique. My wife was pregnant, so she decided to sit this one out. I decided to bring my dog because I love our relationship, and I think she's got, not every dog belongs on the golf course, but she's very well behaved and she knows, how to navigate things. We go on off leash walks almost every day. She's good with her commands. Like, don't bring your dog who's not going to listen to you do it at a golf course. That's a horrible idea. But there was something about bringing my dog that made me a little bit more brave, in the sense that, like, a solo dude just doing something, you're just kind of like bouncing around. The dog gave me structure, gave me the companion, gave me this thing to kind of navigate. And, if I'm sitting in a brewery by myself, just in the corner, I kind of look like a weirdo. But if I have my dog there, then it's totally normal. And so, like, there's this element of the dog is a wonderful conduit to, like, interacting with other people when you are solo, that was just really wonderful to have. Like, people would come up to her, say hi, and then ask me questions and just was able to, have a warmer experience than I would have done when I was by myself. So then the book came from really just wanting to work on that skill. I did the trip, came home, and was like, okay, well, how can I use this in some way? And I wanted to work on my writing. I feel like it's a skill that is dying. And I started working on it and doing kind of like, there was structure to the story. I've never written anything before like this. But the trip and the days gave the story structure already that then I was able to just kind of fall into and kind of talk about those things. And it was really just done as a learning experience. Along the way, I learned how to write. Going back, I would structure things differently in some sections and things like that. Like, this is the first time I've done this. I'm not winning any literary awards. Like, I know that that's the case, but I want to do another one. Like, I want to do this, get it out in the world and start working. And, I think that there's more stories to tell. I'm excited to see what other adventures are out there.
No doubt. And so you published this is available on Amazon, but this is published through Amazon as well, right?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. If you're interested in writing anything, Kindle makes it very easy. I have both the Kindle version and the paperback version that you could buy on Amazon or pre-order on Amazon. And then things will be available on the 15th.
Oh, it's got a great title. I give you kudos for that.
Thank you.
A Nod to Shel Silverstein, Where the Fairway Ends.
Yeah, Shel's really important to us growing up. He in my family, my uncle is a record producer. Okay. He produced a band called Dr. Hook in the Medicine Show. I don't know if you know them.
Can't say I'm familiar with their catalog.
Couple tunes. They know that probably the most famous song they have is on the cover of the Rolling Stone. that is get played. They sing it in Almost Famous in that movie when they make it on. And it's this kind of 60s, 70s song. And they were kind of that era. But my uncle Ron, he was best friends with Shel Silverstein growing up in New York. And so Ron produced Shel's, a lot of his work. They actually have a Grammy that they won together for the audiobook of Where the Sidewalk Ends. So my family has this very close tie to Shel Silverstein. I wanted to pay homage to my uncle who passed away last year by kind of playing on that title. My uncle was a big golfer, best friends with Shel. And I felt like there would be no better way to honor him than to, you know, kind of make this play on Where the Sidewalk Ends.
That's cool. I didn't know that. That's a great
backstory.
He's
a cool dude, man. He's so cool. I have this awesome. So this is him. This is this little poster. So this is Dustin Hoffman.
Okay.
And my Uncle Ron. So this is Uncle Ron. This is Dustin Hoffman on the set of who is Harry Kellerman. How cool is this?
Dustin Hoffman looks absurd in that picture. That's fantastic. Yeah.
So like my uncle, he was truly like this guy. He lived this like rock and roll life. He was the person who gave A Boy Named Sue, which was sung by Johnny Cash. That's actually originally done by Shel Silverstein. And my uncle was the guy. He lived in Nashville and like made all that happen.
Interesting. I need to do some more. I've always heard because my only familiarity with Shel Silverstein is, you know, where the sidewalk ends and Light in the Attic. And there's a third one that the titles are escaping my head that I read to my kids all the time, but I read
the
when I was a kid.
The Giving Tree, probably. Was that one of his? I think so.
The Giving Tree, but that's not the one I'm thinking of. There's another one. I don't know. They're not important, but I've always heard that his catalog, he also wrote a bunch of like darker, like more adult, you know, books.
Yeah.
He was not just a children's writer and had a pretty wild story himself. I don't know the whole story, but I don't know if they've ever done a real film biography on him or anything, but I know
he's such a character. And that was probably one of the biggest things that I lost when my uncle passed away was just some of those stories. He had these rock and roll stories from living and growing up in this era and being best friends and kind of like touching greatness all around him. Shel was a great person. I went and helped my aunt clean out their place when he passed, and we would find like original storyboards from Where the Sidewalk Ends or things like that. Like these priceless, really cool things. But yeah. Long story short, Shel and Where the Fairway Ends is really an homage to my uncle Ron. And I think that, like, you know, most golfers can kind of understand that to a certain extent. Like, you know, if you have shots in the fairway over and over again, that's great. But, you know, it's really when you're in the woods off to the side and you hit that awesome hero shot that rolls up to the green that, you know, that's where the magic happens. And so like, it's really, you know, to me as you know, a golfer who is, ends up in the woods a lot, I think Where the Fairway Ends is really where the story begins.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, excited to read it. And it's available on Amazon. What day?
Saturday, November 15th. You can do Kindle and paperback. And yeah, man, I just like, I think what I really want to do is like, just anybody who's thinking about writing a book, like do it, man. Like it doesn't have to be good. Doesn't have to be perfect. Just get it out there, man. And you learn through the process. Like, you know, I think that it's just, I think that so often these things feel like major hurdles. Mm-hmm. But if you break it down and get good help, like, you know, your support as you read a couple of chapters and gave me feedback was huge. I got a writing coach and I would meet with them each week and they would give me feedback on how to structure things or, you know, different literary elements that I, you know, was trying to remember from, you know, fifth grade English class. It's really a joy. And my hope is that it just really, I want to go on more adventures and I want to read other people's adventures. So one of the things that really inspired me was there was this book called I Golfed Across Mongolia. And it was this guy who brought 300 golf balls and a 3-iron and he golfed from one side of Mongolia to the other. And I was just blown away by that. And he, you know, if you go there, it's essentially one big fairway. And so he was like, man, it'd be so cool to do this. And he wrote about it. And, you know, I love those travel books. And so I'd kind of always been thinking, you know, what could I write about? What's my travel novel look like?
Quick interlude to let you know that this episode is brought to you by the Golf Yards, a new state-of-the-art indoor golf performance club coming to Arlington in early 2026. We'll be open 24/7, built for golfers of all levels. The Golf Yards will offer private TrackMan bays, a dedicated putting and short game area, coaching, and a modern space designed for real game improvement. Founding memberships will be limited, so to get updates and be first in line, head over to thegolfyards.com and sign up to join the list. The next project you've kind of been working on, because so you've got two, they're kind of all listed. You know, you've been busy, I think, since the last time we had you on here. But weirdgolf.com is a website you launched. And within the website, you can see links to the book that comes out this week we just talked about. But it also has a couple more projects, one being a map of weird golf courses around the country, and another about a journey that you're a project that you're undertaking that I think is still in the works. Which one do you want to start with? Start with the weird golf map. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So, you know, part of this started, I just love unique golf courses. The backyard courses, the weird ones, the ones that have those unique features. And so I put out a thing to Reddit and I was like, hey, what are the weirdest golf courses in America? And I got 400 responses. And so then from there, I was like, this is so cool. And so I started to curate them. I created the spreadsheet. And then from that, I was like, what can I do with this? And so the idea came to, you know, create this map, make it so that people can see what unique golf courses are near them and hopefully go and visit them. So the map was just kind of like this tool that I wanted to create to help people find these wonderful gems, these hidden gems. And then all of these other things kind of spread from that. And the map, the book, this other trip that we're going to talk about in a second, some of these other things were independent projects that I brought under this umbrella of Weird Golf. And
I love
it. I'm putting it together. Yeah.
You know, looking at your website, you know, so the definition of weird golf is fairly broad, understandably.
It's true.
You list as you know, essentially anything unusual, quirky, or weird. But just for examples, like if I zoom in to our region here, you know, one that absolutely qualifies, I think, without anybody second guessing, would be Meadow Farms down in Locust Grove. That absolutely qualifies as a weird golf course. You know, for those folks that don't know, 3 nines, one of them that includes a par six that claims to be the longest hole in America. Also, you know, it's a waterfall hole. But there's anybody's been down there. A baseball diamond. What else? There's some other weird. There's a bunch of weird stuff.
That one's cool.
Really cool place. But then also like renditions, which, you know, maybe it falls less under the category of weird, but it is unique. And the fact that it's a replica golf course that, you know, when compared to your traditional golf course.
Exactly.
You know, maybe a little weird.
That's the goal. Weird is different to each person.
Sure.
And there are some that are truly weird, like Furnace Hills or Furnace Valley in Death Valley. Or no, Furnace Creek in Death Valley.
Furnace Creek, yep.
You know, where Willie Nelson's cut and putt outside in San Antonio or Texas. You know, there's golf courses that are built into quarries. There's golf courses with sand greens. There's golf courses with, you know, all these kind of unique things to them. And weird is different for every person. But I think what I really wanted to do is create this resource so that people could potentially find. And, you know, the goal would be turn this into more of an interactive thing so that people can share their stories, share pictures. Like there's more to do here, but, you know, wanted to get out the map first. And then, you know, like you said, I got a lot of other things on my plate. So I'm just trying to make sure these things get out there.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great concept, honestly. There's a lot. I mean, golf travel is so huge right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the high-end golf travel is enormous, with all the big destination bucket list kind of resort travel golf, which certainly has its place and it's all doing very well. But people are also like, you know, seeking out and yearning these kind of courses like these, you know, that the one that's been around for a while now, the Sugarloaf Social Club has their hidden gem map, which I know a lot of, I've used that. A lot of people use that as to try to find courses that are a little more under the radar. You know, I think Fried Egg has a version where at least they used to, that's kind of like, you know, best, I can't remember how they labeled it, but essentially best deals, like best bang for your buck kind of courses.
Yeah.
And so just unusual golf courses, I think, to a certain type of golfer, people will absolutely love to check out. And it's a lot of times it's maybe not a course you're going to seek out, but like you said, I'm traveling for work in San Antonio. Oh, let me pull up this map and you see Willie Nelson's Cut and Putt. I'm not familiar with that one, but if I were nearby, I'm like, damn, that sounds like a pretty cool place to spend an afternoon. And a lot of these unusual golf courses, I'm sure, are like 9-hole courses or pitch and putt, stuff like that, that you can knock out when you're doing, you know, whether you're doing your big boy trip or if you happen to be in town. So
100%. Yeah. You tag it on as a warm up or just a fun round after your big round at, you know, whatever country club. Like that's the best way to do it, I think. But yeah, it's, there's so many cool courses out there. And I just really think it's whatever we can do to highlight them, and especially those backyard courses that don't have big marketing budgets. If you do want to get out there, one of the coolest places in our area is in Salisbury, Maryland, this place TK's Back Nine.
Sure.
It's it was a private course that this guy built over 30, 40 years, and it was for him and the community and like his buddies. And then around COVID time, they started to open it up to others. And then he passed away and his grandson decided to like make it more public and put it up on Google. And that was how I found it. But it's this incredible course that is truly this labor of love. Like it was a field before. And then 30 years, this guy built this thing, 9 holes, 2 different tee boxes. So it really plays as 18, all these different nooks and crannies and kind of cool things that as you go around the course, you know, he built little gardens, he built little ponds, he built a whole like town in the back. And it was really just this, as I was walking around, I was just blown away by all these little hidden gems within hidden gems. And, you know, to think that this course is just tucked away in Salisbury, Maryland, and, you know, I could pay $10 and walk on whenever I want is something that I feel like more people need to know about.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sure your map will evolve here. But no, I think it's a great concept. I'm excited to see kind of how it evolves, but having kind of a database and a map, a digital map where you can see kind of all the quirky, unusual places around the country, it's absolutely valuable. And I think a lot of people use it as a guide. And that brings me to kind of your third project here. You've been busy.
Yeah.
And the third one here is describe this one. This is the kind of an adventure that you're planning.
Yes.
Where you're replicating a kind of a cross-country golf journey that exists today in Australia?
Yeah. So through all this stuff and all the research, I found this golf course in Australia called the Nullarbor Links. It's a very cool concept. It was, you know, created by the government to increase tourism in Southwest Australia. And it's a 1,500 kilometer golf course where holes are spread out throughout that, you know, that whole route. There's different, you know, sites along the way, but the goal was really to combine tourism with golf and some of these other things. I'm not getting to Australia anytime soon. I have a 1-year-old, you know, like I was just like, this isn't happening. But then I was like, huh, like, does anything like this exist in the United States? And then I kind of started digging and I was like, well, I probably can't create this, but what if we took 18 different holes from 18 different golf courses and put them together to create the longest golf course in the world, non-continuous golf course in the world? And so that was kind of this, the idea of this, and it kind of came to be by inspired by the Nullarbor Links. And now my goal is to, you know, start off in DC, hit 18 different golf courses and establish a benchmark. There would be a time record and a course record. Very similar. If you go on Nullarbor Links website, they have a very similar database. And whether you do it in 2 weeks or 10 years, the goal is just to complete it. And very similar to the book, I just hope it inspires people to think outside the box and, you know, do things differently. So the goals are break a world record for longest non-continuous golf course in the world. Single one of these golf courses is going to be municipal. So I want to highlight and celebrate kind of municipal golf. I want to create that roadmap and the scorecard for others to follow. And then we'll be creating content. There'll be another book that comes out of it. And I didn't really lean into social media, wasn't really pushing stuff during this Nova Scotia trip. This would be kind of the next level in terms of content and taking a step up in those things.
I didn't realize that it almost, so the timed aspect of this, I think it could be kind of cool, because then you add kind of a cannonball run aspect to it.
100%.
Where it's almost like, you know, the equation that they use in speed golf, which is essentially your number of strokes and your time in minutes. I've never done speed golf myself. I don't know what the equation is, but there's some, you know, they determine who's the best, not just by the fastest, but also by your score kind of computed together. But you could do the same thing here. It's like once you have the map, the established, you know, cross country 18 holes, who can get across country the fastest and I don't know, somehow document your score in doing so, I think.
That's the goal, man.
There's certainly something there.
Like the logistics of, okay, well, I've got to play the third hole at, you know, this course, and then the 17th hole at the next course, and then the sixth hole at this course. Well, maybe I'm playing the first six holes because I want to make sure I'm warmed up for that sixth hole, because only the sixth hole counts for your score on that hole. So it's logistics of trying to figure out whether, am I playing this full round? Am I just going to go and try to play one hole? Am I going to like play two courses in a day and keep going? Like the all of those logistics are part of each individual's, you know, travel plans, which I think is kind of fun.
It's certainly different. You know, I'm curious to see how this one pans out. Is the idea, when are you planning on doing this?
So my hope is I'm aiming for March. My goal is get this book out in November, use the momentum from where the fairway ends to, you know, start a Kickstarter, get some backing. I have my VW that I just picked up that's going to be at my house for this thing. You know, hotels, I'm not going to be doing hotels. I'm going to be, you know, eating in the van. I'm going to try to do it on a budget and not, you know, rack up thousands of dollars in hotel fees and some of those other things. But yeah, the goal is prep over the next couple months, get people on board, build some buzz, and hopefully do it in March as kind of courses start to open up again.
And are you getting the golf courses on board, or are you just going to show up and play golf and then
part of it. There would be part of, you know, the list that I have on here is not 100% confirmed yet. This is, you know, some of these are locked in. Some of these are, I'm still working on that. But essentially the golf course, you know, would receive publicity for being part of the project. They'd receive a certificate for being part of the Guinness Book of World Records, longest non-continuous golf course in the world. And then we'd also throw some other things their way in terms of content. And, you know, if as you traverse the country, the focus is on municipal golf in Pennsylvania or Maryland or Virginia are going to be very different than Arizona and Nevada. So the goal is to really tell those stories and highlight the efforts that these courses are making to be a part of the community, conserve water, do things differently. And that's really, you know, my hope is to be able to highlight the courses. And then, you know, because of that, they're a little bit more interested in being a part of this adventure.
Sounds great, man. Part of the is the idea that you're also going to, at the end of this is your second book.
Winnie's coming with. We're going to write another book. Like I think that there's such a cool story to tell here, because I don't know about you. I don't really want to get into politics, but I felt more disconnected from my country than I've ever felt. And I think that so much of what I've consumed about how people think or how they interact or what they think about me or whatever is done through my phone. And I don't want to do that. I want to go out there and shake hands with people and talk to people. And I think that like, there's something that is going on right now that I feel like what I'm thinking and feeling is not, I'm not alone in that feeling and vibe. And I think that to use golf in this way to connect with people and use sport is really important. You know, there's the golf aspect, there's these other aspects, but I think there's also this like Americana story to be told. And, you know, this discovery or rediscovery maybe of really what America is about. And I think like along the way, I'm going to tell stories not of fighting about people in politics or whatever, but, you know, getting help when I've broken down on the side of the road or some of these other things that I think really are much more of the stories of humans.
Love it, man. The Great American Road Trip. Yeah. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. Still alive.
Have you done a road trip or a cross country road trip before? I've done a couple.
Never done a cross country. I've done New Orleans to Chicago. I've done up and down the East Coast, but not horizontally. I've gone a lot vertically.
I did it twice in my 20s.
Well, dude, hey, keep March open. Let me know what you know. Just come with, you know, at least for a little bit.
Yeah, as you're probably learning the drill with a 1 year old. With two toddlers and a lot going on, I can tell you right now it's not happening. But I wish you nothing but the best of luck. My days of going cross country. I've done both the kind of the southern route and the northern route. Southern route was without my own mode of transportation, so it involved buses, rides from people at hostels, a little bit of hitchhiking. One train, I think the only train I took was from Miami to Tampa. But kind of flew down to Miami and went from Miami to San Francisco. But over the course of 3 months, and much later, did a northern route with an old girlfriend where we were in a car, but kind of went through the northern part of the country. But they're two of the greatest trips of my life. Kind of looking back on it, just from the stories and the adventures, and both were. I have a lot of stories from that I'll save for another time, but it was
sounds like you got a book to write, man. It's just so cool, man. There's so many cool courses. Golf is such a wonderful thing to travel with, and every course is different. I think that's what's so wonderful. Like the courses in the Mid-Atlantic are completely different than the ones in the South, the ones in the North. You know, you got ones in the Redwoods, you've got cut and putt down there in Texas. Like it's such a unique thing because every other sport is just this unified field. And I would say other than surfing where you sit and watch waves and, you know, are interacting with this other element that kind of pushes back, golf is just such a wonderful thing in because you just get to experience so many of those different landscapes. So
yeah, no doubt.
That's the goal. No doubt. You know, that's really cool.
Well, congratulations on the book and this project. And I'm excited to both read the completed version of the book and follow along and see where Weird Golf goes and as well as your trip in the spring. So very
nice,
cool,
man. Well, I appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity to tell you and others about it. And, you know, I'm also excited about what we're working on with the magazines.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the reasons I certainly am not going to be able to join you in March. Yeah, we're just been plugging around. You know, I was going to chat a bit about the fact, yeah, I haven't played much golf recently. I mean, I've been getting out a handful here and there, just life's busy, but also kind of in building and planning mode on kind of the next chapter. Well, we're a Beltway Golfer, and that's the magazine that we're launching in the spring. So yeah, it's things are busy. Got a nice team together. And you know, just trying to figure out the look and feel and build out the content of the first issue, but it's exciting getting access to the courses and kind of the people that we need to in a timely manner is even though the first issue is not coming out until with printing times and lead times and editing times and for photography for photo purposes, the fact that leaves are falling off the trees right now, it's already kind of been a little bit stressful, you know, coordinating with courses and writers and photographers to try to get the content that we want for the first issue, but it's coming along. And as you know, you've been helping out with some ad stuff, and you know we're meeting with potential partners and getting some signed up. So it's all kind of happening at once, but it's an exciting project, and hopefully people will be excited to read it come spring because we're the team that we got going is excited to put it out. But for playing golf, you know, I really haven't played a ton. I did organize I'm involved with my kids' baseball program here in Arlington County. We do an annual tournament in Laurel Hill, and we got blessed with it. Just a gorgeous day. So that came out great. It's always funny because it's really a group of mostly baseball dads, some moms. But every year, you know, as Beltway Golfer slowly rose, you know, that's something that's so separate from kind of what I'm doing here with Beltway Golfer and what we've been building. You know, these are just baseball dads, and every year there's at least three or four. They're like, "Oh, Beltway Golfer! I didn't realize." You realize like people you know from a different kind of world, yeah, universe are actually already well familiar with what you're doing, which is kind of cool. But just posted this morning, got out last week and played the Medal of Honor golf course down at Quantico.
Yeah, that's a cool spot.
It's a really cool spot. It's kind of a fun, it's a fun little golf course. It's great piece of land. You know, obviously it's on a military base, on a Marine base, but it's wide open. You know, I don't know if they're ever going to put any money into it to make it nice.
It's pretty low.
I'm sure it's pretty low on their priorities. It probably hasn't been updated in quite a long time, but it's good sized golf course. It's like 6,600 yards. It's a little bit up and back. There's some nice bones on a couple of the green complexes. You know, it needs some work, but it's a very cool place. I mean, I went down last week and there was maybe two or three other people on the golf course, just kind of walked out and had a great time. It's pretty quiet. Yeah, the military golf courses around here, people kind of forget about, because a lot of them have just like one extra step to get out on. Andrews Air Force Base, Fort Belvoir, and Medal of Honor are the three main ones here. There's a couple other ones down in the Virginia Beach area that you can get out of. Sewell Point is a really cool one. Donald Ross down that way.
What's the extra step? What do you have to do? You have to like just getting or put in a...
Not even. Just like you have to show ID and go... they're not all the same. Fort Belvoir, I think, is the easiest to get on base, but sometimes they change to year.
But like it's for the, like I could, the public can play it, but you just have to go through that extra
all three.
Step.
Cool. Fort Belvoir, Andrews Air Force Base, and Medal of Honor are all open to the public.
Good to know. That's awesome.
You just have to go get a base pass, and the process at the three golf courses is different for each one, but none of them take that long. And once you're out there, and all three of those golf courses, none of them are very busy. I mean, Fort Belvoir's got 36 holes. Andrews Air Force Base. Ben Ellis, who I talked to, the superintendent I talked to a lot, is going to kill me because I can never keep track of how many holes are left over there. But it's either 27 or 36. But Ben's always, he's always busy at 4 a.m. keeping Andrews Air Force golf courses in good shape. But no, their golf courses are kind of forgotten by the local golf public and shouldn't be.
Yeah. Good to know. Well, hey, man, unfortunately, my boy is, he's up. I don't know if you can see him. He's banging on the crib.
Yeah. All right. I'll let you go. Absolutely. No, this is great. Well, congrats.
Yeah.
Congrats again on the book, and thanks for coming on.
Yeah, man. Looking forward to it, and definitely excited for the magazine as well. So thanks again.